Global from Asia, episode 417. Maggie, do you like roller coasters?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, we're doing roller coasters today. Let's tune in.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight-up, actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
So, Maggie, you said you like roller coasters?
Yeah.
What kind of roller coasters?
Like the mummy one?
The mummy? I thought you didn't like that one.
I liked it.
Okay, I thought it was scary. All right, so today's show, we're doing roller coasters. I spoke at a fireside chat about roller coasters and e-commerce. Maggie and my work in business, we have roller coasters too, like the ups and the downs. Business is scary too. There's up, it's an adventure, it's a roller coaster. So I was at a fireside chat with John Ho at Alt Chiang Mai. We're gonna have the haunted house with them too for Halloween. And we talk about the e-commerce, the Amazon aggregators, and the COVID, and all this crazy stuff that happened the last 4 or 5 years in e-commerce. And it's kind of lining up to the new beginnings, open borders new beginnings, the cross-border summit in just a couple of weeks. But let's tune into the show, and then after, I'll talk more to Maggie about the roller coasters. All right, let's tune in. globalformasia.com/rollercoaster. All right, we have Tommy, the sales manager at Cross Better Logistics. How are you, Tommy?
Hi, how am I?
We just got to meet here in Shenzhen, China. It's great. They support the show at Global From Asia, and we also use them ourselves for many of our brands and e-commerce businesses. And Tommy really cares. They always are trying to help us save money. You know, you have some products you keep for us in China. You have some products you keep for us in the US warehouse. And I really appreciate that. And you can talk to this seller, right? You can give them your advice. You work with many Chinese sellers a lot, right? And you can help the sellers understand more.
Yeah, we are very professional for the shipment to USA and Canada. Also, we have warehouse in USA and Canada. We can help our factories, suppliers, sellers for the shipment.
Yes.
For the e-commerce business.
Yep, and you even keep stuff in China too. So sometimes if you have the limitations of sending too much to Amazon, you can keep it here in China with Cross Better, or you can send, of course, to the US warehouse. They have many different options, and they're always trying their best to find out what's the best solution for you. So yeah. Definitely talk to Tommy, talk to Cross Better, and thank you for your support of the community.
Yes, we have good pricing and better service.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My name is John. I'm the founder and owner of the co-living space and co-working space here called Alt Chiang Mai. We are regularly hosting different types of events on a weekly, monthly basis. This one that we're hosting right now, it's called the Founders Happy Hour, which is also one of my favorite events because every time I invite a speaker, there's a new topic that I'm not a specialist in, but I get to ask the questions. And I get to learn about the industry, the business, and also the people in that area of expertise. And for me, it's just a great experience to, you know, learn something from time to time. And today, I want to introduce to you our speaker, Michael.
Yep.
Who's also based in Chiang Mai, and who's an expert and a specialist in the e-commerce business for how many years?
Almost 20.
20, right. So maybe we can start with Mike, if you can introduce a little bit about your background, where you have been, and what are you currently doing?
Sure. Thanks for having me, John.
Yep.
Happy Friday the 13th. I think Freddy Krueger might come in, maybe. I saw some memes already. Yeah, so I'm Mike Michelini. I was born in America. I guess I'm American, but you know, we can't control where we're born. I always think about that lately. I started selling on eBay in 2004, having no idea what to sell. While I worked on Wall Street in New York City on junk bond distressed debt on 60 Wall Street at Deutsche Bank. And drop shipping, wholesaling, retail stores, third party logistics. I had no idea. There were so many stories. I used my fraternity as a warehouse for a while. I had my younger fraternity brother helping me do logistics and receiving. as truly school of hard knocks, had no clue. None of my family was an entrepreneur or business owner. Led me to China in 2007. Quit my job in Wall Street before the crash and started buying from factories in China. Thought I would just be there for a month, turned into 10 years. Met my wife in Beijing, you know, traveled all over China, grew a team in the Philippines online, and came to Thailand in 2018 because of my two children needing school, mostly, and a lifestyle. And of course, COVID was a, we'll talk about that, I think, in the questions. But basically, yeah, I've been selling on eBay, not anymore, but Amazon FBA. I've created and sold a few brands, work with teams, have a podcast, do events, you know, learned about almost every part of the process the hard way. So I try to make it easier by sharing as much as I possibly can in the amount of time I have. So that's right. It.
Wow, 20 years.
Next year will be 20, 04. Right.
I understand we also have someone in the e-commerce business, but can I see a show of hands if anyone is already in the industry or?
Yes.
Okay, 1, 2, 3. Cool, we have 3 people, that's in it.
Great.
Okay, and by the way, it's a very casual setting, meaning if you feel like you want to raise your hands and ask any questions relevant to the conversation, please feel free to do it. I have an extra mic here that I can just give it to you. Yeah, we good? Cool. So, wow, 20 years. Okay, what I want to, like when we were discussing about the topic today, because I'm sure if we talk about e-commerce, we can spend days to discuss this, but I suppose we want to focus more on, you know, post-pandemic and the new trends that's happening right now in the e-commerce world, because I suppose you also have seen all the changes from, you know, eBay as a very popular platform to right now, I don't even know what it does.
I guess to, used items or something.
Right, and then to Amazon, which is definitely the go-to place, but then everyone complains about it because of the commissions they cut. But what is the biggest like impression you have pre-pandemic and post-pandemic in the grand scheme of things in e-commerce right now? If you can just have an overview of it.
I mean, it was kind of one of the craziest roller. The last 4 or 5 years have been the kind of most exciting time of e-commerce. I mean, good and bad. I almost thought our business was dead when March, it was actually Friday the 13th in March when the 2020, when Amazon stopped receiving inbound shipments, when the COVID hit.
Right.
And we thought we were dead. I mean, they didn't even accept new inbound shipments. They said only, they wouldn't accept inbound shipments for non-essential items. It was like basically just masks or the alcohol or whatever they deemed essential, but my products were not. So I didn't care. I had a container in China ready to go. They didn't care. People went nuts. You know, it was the craziest time. That it was Friday the 13th, just like today in 2020, when the whole world, that was like peak craziness that one day. And then people thought their Amazon business were worthless. People thought they were going to go bankrupt. I mean, some people sold travel accessories and they just dropped. Nobody was traveling, right?
Yeah.
It was just a nightmare. And then it totally went the other way. Aggregators came in, investors, just trying to consolidate all of the businesses. So like within 6 or 8 months, all of a sudden it was like the value dropped and it just shot up because then everybody started buying online. Old people that go to the stores, it was like what people said, I wasn't involved, but it was almost like what people said happened in 2003 in China with the SARS happened to the whole world. Because SARS is when they said Taobao and you know, Alibaba, all their business started really picking up in China because people were forced to buy online.
Right.
And I think that's what happened around the world. So then everybody was going crazy thinking e-commerce is the only way. Everything has to be going online. So then all these aggregators started going crazy, buying up every business they could, and they're driving the value so high to only now crash. And there's even rumors that the biggest aggregators in Amazon are going bankrupt. So it's totally like up, dramatic drops, spikes, drops in the industry.
So what was it for you personally leaving China, based in Thailand, all these roller coaster ups and downs, and right now, like, how are you doing first of all? Like, are you okay?
I mean, we have, you know, there's various Telegram and WhatsApp groups, and I was engaging a lot in a new somebody new came into one of the groups, and he's like, is there still money to be made on Amazon? It seems so hard. I don't. And a lot of us were saying the same things. It's not as easy as it used to be. Like, in the easy days of FBA was like 2015 or maybe 16, 17, and then it started getting more and more hard. But we said, you know, I love Tim Ferriss. I don't want to say bad things about Tim Ferriss, but too many people read the 4-hour work week, come to Thailand, and try to do nothing, or try to do a minimum amount of work, right? And I lived in China for 10 years, and the Chinese sellers are like, these foreigners are crazy. They go to like the Thailand, or they go to like digital nomads, and they do their brand, and then they don't work. But like Chinese, like, you go to Chinatown anywhere, they work their butts off, you know? They work hard. You know, I know there's black hat sellers in China, but regardless of black hat or white hat, they work hard. And so we told them, you gotta build a brand. You gotta actually work. Don't just like use Jungle Scout, find the supply, demand, source on Alibaba, you know, throw your logo, send it to Amazon and make money. It's a much more effort now. And for me, yeah, I mean, the crazy story is I moved back to China in COVID. I got stuck in China during COVID for 2.5 years. I have a car here. I had my belongings here. But my wife wanted to go back to China after Christmas 2019. And we got stuck there. There's a much longer story to that, but basically we got stuck there.
So on the seller side, number one, definitely not easier. Number two, there seems to be a lot more branding involved. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? I guess, and okay, so before you just pick a product, if it's in the market that has higher demand than the supply side, or if the margins are right, then I suppose you can just sell like in larger quantity. But now that game doesn't work anymore. So what does that mean as a seller?
So, you know, part of that conversation we had today is it's not just about working hard, it's about working smart. So you kind of got to have a strategy. So I have a few different brands I was chatting before. Each one has a different advantage, or at least I think an advantage. One time I'm working with the factory directly, where we partner, and he's a shareholder in the brand. Other times I work with a really talented designer that's an expert on branding, and we make a very good brand, like Excalibur Brothers is one that I'm working on, and it's very well-defined branding. And it stands out like night and day, because we spend so much on the packaging and the story and the experience. So you kind of got to have an advantage, whether it's maybe you're direct with the factory, or you're really good at branding, or the third, which I'm not as good at, but John's sitting right here, is, you know, unique product design. Like maybe Kickstarter or crowdfunding, or even direct to Amazon, but being unique. Even Chinese sellers are patenting more, and they do more legal fights between each other, because they even want to have a patent, you know, to have a patent on Amazon, because basically the thing is Amazon is getting more and more, I mean, it's following the rules. Before, you know, you could kind of get away with maybe trademark infringement, even if you didn't know, but now it's the other way. There's lawyers that are scraping Amazon, suing everybody because you mistakenly use a photo that you didn't know, or you use a name you didn't know you couldn't use, or a patent you didn't know that it existed, and a patent troll. I feel like their patent trolls are just suing people. But the guy didn't even know. So you gotta do like patent search. You gotta do IP search. You gotta make sure that you tell all your freelancers, don't use Google Images, because I'll get sued. And the going rate is about $5,000. If you get caught using copyright images on Amazon, it seems like the lawyer conferences, they kind of start with 10,000. But usually you can get them down to 5. But usually you can't get them less than 5. So usually if you're selling a product on Amazon and they catch you, they freeze your account, they say, give me 10 grand. And then you can bargain them to 5 in our experience. But basically what I'm saying is you can't get away with that, whether you did it intentionally or not. So you have to kind of use IP and copyright.
I was just watching one of your videos that you uploaded. And you were talking to this guy called Max, who's actually at Amazon. This is development.
Oh, yeah,
Max. Sales or whatever, right? And he was sharing about his attempt to be a seller and losing 700,000 Thai Bot.
Yeah. That was pain. I can't believe that.
But to me, that almost sounds like, okay, like, what does it take to actually understand the game that people are playing nowadays in e-commerce, specifically in Amazon? Like, how would you even advise anyone who wants to come into, you know, this for the first time and navigate all these like legal issues, product design, branding? It sounds almost like you have to start your own business, but just latching on that Amazon platform.
I mean, some issues he made is he bought too much inventory at the beginning, right? So Max, I definitely recommend it. Just came out. He's the head of biz dev at Amazon Global Selling in Bangkok. Super nice guy and super transparent. He shared about his losing of, I think 700,000 baht. But he just jumped right in and bought a ton of inventory. I think he did coffee filters, or one of them was coffee filters. And he just sent a ton to Amazon. But I do the opposite. I send almost the minimum to Amazon when I launch a product. Because as much as we try to do research and think we're right, you don't really know until you start. So my big tip there is don't send tons of inventory right away. Send usually the minimum and then test it. And then because you got to be willing to lose or be wrong. And I'm wrong a lot lately, and you got to just kill product. You kill it. So my strategy would be choose a brand, not a product. Like choose a market, a niche. Like I said, Excalibur Brothers is a men's gift. I didn't say it's like a flask, although we sell a flask, but you kind of pick a category, and then you might be wrong on the first product, but you almost treat that like an MBA. I didn't do an MBA. I had saved money to go to MBA school, but I decided to instead kind of use that as MBA by doing.
Right.
So you could take a course, but you can also kind of use that first product, even if you might lose on it or make a mistake, you can use that as like education. But maybe don't throw the whole brand away, but maybe there's a second product in that same brand category. So your branding can be reused.
Right. Now, what about the purchasing side? What about the customer side? Have they also evolved? And what are the noticeable behavior changes recently, you know, that they're doing?
I mean, yeah, it's been so dramatic. Like, of course, I mean, all of our worlds have been dramatically changed with COVID, but especially like sourcing, and because of course you couldn't go to China, Canton Fair. It's happening right now. Actually, I saw pictures and we're trying to figure out how many are there. I don't think many are there. I don't think as many are going there anymore still. But, you know, the traditional pre-COVID was, you know, go to Alibaba, try to go to Canton Fair, but do it all online. But these factories are hungry. Like I was in April this year, I went to Guangzhou, Canton Fair, and I felt like a beautiful girl in a nightclub with all guys, you know? Like I was like a target. I felt like a deer, you know, like with wolves. They're like, come here, my product here. My catalog, more than ever. Like they were hungry. Like there was not many foreign buyers, and it was way more like domestic buyer. Like they made a new category, or maybe it was always a category, but the badges were like domestic buyer. But I think a lot of us felt like they just did it to kind of fill it up. But you know, the factories are having trouble. And of course, trade war, Donald Trump, you know, that's still kind of, I think, affected China. So a lot, you know, even part of my strategy coming here was to source here. I am buying from a couple factories here I could share about if we have time. But, you know, a lot of people are aggressively looking at India, Vietnam, Thailand, Mexico, you know, so the supply chain is getting radically changed. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, Chinese sellers got wiped, a lot of them got wiped out in 2021.
Do you think you have advantage over maybe the Chinese sellers in the marketplace because you understand like customer behavior better as an American, or like how is it benefiting you based here and conducting business in the e-commerce platform outside of China, let's say?
I mean, it depends, but it depends on the category. So you there's all these tools like, you know, Jungle Scout, Helium 10. And they'll run a report and they'll show you the flags usually of the seller where they registered, and it's like red, you know, the Chinese flag, so it's like all red, you know. And it's like That's usually a scary one when I do a research and I see like the top 20, 30, 40 sellers are Chinese sellers. Not because maybe they're black hat, but they're just, they'll do anything to win, you know? I mean, I respect the hustle. I have a lot of Chinese seller friends personally. But, you know, to fight against Chinese seller usually is not recommended. But when I do see that, and I am doing that, I try to find something where I can be significantly different than the others.
Right. I'm also curious, what are the categories that you're selling products online, if you don't mind sharing? Maybe bricks?
I started selling 6 years ago on bol.com, the local Dutch marketplace.
Yeah, bol, yeah.
And for a Dutch person, that's very easy. And when I came to Amazon, so I used bol.com to get familiar with the e-commerce. And then after...
Should be on.
No.
Use this one.
Oh.
Okay, are you
recording? Yeah, we're trying to record. Test.
Well,
yeah, it says.
After bol.com, I started on Amazon, and then I found out Amazon is such as, yeah. But about niches, I started on a Dutch marketplace who sells to Belgium and the Netherlands. And Belgium and the Netherlands are, I think, one of the biggest buy countries in the world. So people buy all year, every season. And things for the bike, like I sell locks and bicycle pumps, yeah, they break. They break, so they are like sustainable. They need them renewed. That's where I started. And 3 years ago, I found out about a board game, very niche, it's called Crokinole. If someone knows it, I don't think so, but okay. Yeah, Crokinole is quite popular in Canada, so I found out about the game in France. Okay. I came back home, I wanted to buy it just as a consumer.
Cool.
And I found out I could only buy it in Canada, and in Canada it was minimum 350 euros, and then it's a 7 kilograms big thing,
right.
So shipping it to the Netherlands would be also $200,
okay.
So very expensive, cool. And then a bill ring in my head like, well, I can give it to Europe,
right,
somewhere cheaper, cool, to make it more available.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Right. So, obviously, it's a regional play that I feel like it's a regional play. And John, you're also in which category would you describe yourself?
I would say wellness and
wellness.
Meditation.
Right.
Wellness and meditation. And we do not sell on Amazon. It's only WooCommerce.
Okay.
So... that's a bit difficult.
Yeah. And gentlemen at the back, do you mind just telling us what category?
Furniture. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Now, all these categories that you hear, like, I don't know, do you have an opinion in terms of what is a trending category nowadays? Or, like, are you also pivoting to certain products because you see different markets creating nowadays?
You know, I mean... I try to think of a category that can go wider. Like, you know, I mentioned the brand Excalibur Brothers that we're doing. I kind of like it because I can kind of pick almost anything that, and I could put under it in a way. But it's men's gift. One of our team members is like, oh, I have this really good product for women. Can we put it under Excalibur Brothers? He found a product in our research. I'm like, I think that'd be pretty hard to sell a women's product under Excalibur Brothers, because it's like, and of course the name itself, but not just the name, the way we branded it.
Right.
I try to like think about the brand that could be wide enough that I could kind of experiment with different types of products. But really what you're trying to do is selling to a kind of customer. Who's your customer you're targeting? So if it's bike locks, I think pet furniture, you know, is it... There's AI tools, I think we'll talk about that in a bit. But you can also use AI now to reverse engineer even more of the Amazon listings about what demographic they are, you know, the age, the sex.
Well, that was my next question, because now obviously everyone is talking about ChatGPT AI tools, and do you also use some of these to help you with your business?
Yeah, for sure. We have to. Of course, there's standard ChatGPT, but there's even specialized ones that will specifically do Amazon listings to the site, to the links. You know, you could do a ChatGPT with, like, you know, John was teaching us about the settings, but they specifically output to the length of the bullet points. And I think everybody has to use it. My favorite use case, and I've talked about it, is, you know, reply as a certain tone. So Excalibur Brothers is, you know, of course, medieval. So it's like, reply to customer as a king of England. And it says, dear thou art, you know, and it's, one time it was really, I kind of had a joke, but, you know, customer service replies, you could use the tone of your customer avatar. And one time, you know, I mentioned I have a lot of team in the Philippines, and they said, oh, the electricity's out again in my district. And I say, write letter to Philippines government as King of England, upset, the electricity is out. And it was like this long ChatGPT that's like talking like that. And so you can be even more creative. And like John was saying, like, it makes us do even more. So now it's just giving us pressure to do more work. Right. Create more content, create more listings, create more social media. It's just like we're doing it. So what I'm trying to do is, I have a team, so we're just kind of trying to get them to do even more than before with the same amount of resources.
But you sort of have to too, because if you're not doing it, then every other seller is going to do more with tools and outsourcing, you know,
yeah.
You know, ways of doing it. But that's the game. And if you're playing that game, okay, AI, that's going to help you. And I was going to ask you also, when the customer has like questions and all that, is it automated response right now, or do you still hire the team in Philippines to answer these questions,
yeah,
but using ChatGPT to kind of proofread
I tell them, please use AI. I don't know. There's some companies, I think big corporations, that block AI, I've heard. Like large corporations are blocking AI from... I'm like the opposite. I'm like, you better use this stuff.
Right.
I don't know why I wouldn't want you to use this stuff. I don't understand why they wouldn't want me to use it.
I mean, Amazon blocked because they were asking ChatGPT for proprietary or information, and then that got out.
Oh.
So, I mean, the models are open. Every time you chat with them, it's going to be reprocessed.
Right.
Got it. Maybe that's the reason why.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and even today, like, we got a negative review on Amazon, well, 3-star, and she says it's I mentioned bar products. So we sell these condiment holders where you can put your cherries and your, even here you could use it, right? It's like a plastic thing with like cherries and limes and lemons and, you know, those fruits, and they put in your drink. And she's like, it's really nice, but I don't know why it's not a refrigerator. It should be able to be plugged in and keep it cold for me. Like, you pay $25 for this, and it doesn't say it's electric, and it's good, but you give me a 3-star. So actually, even Nico on our team used AI, and then we wrote back, well, you can't even respond to the review, but we sent her a message, and we say, you could take the bins out and put them in a refrigerator, because the compartments come out. They're like plastic little, like... So you can't say anything, but we write nicely and use AI to write a nice recommendation of, this is how you can refrigerate it. Just take it out of the bin when you finish eating your food and dinner and put it in a refrigerator, you know, like hoping maybe she'll think we're nice and maybe we give
right.
us a 5-star.
I mean, customer service is always the biggest challenge when you're dealing with, you know, B2C situations where you just don't know what type of person is buying your product and how they're going to complain about
it. But for sure, I've gotten a lot of less requests to make scripts. I don't make scripts anymore for the customer service. They all use the AI for scripts and like how to respond to customers. That was like something that was to the native English speaker, me or some other Westerner, that the Philippine team would ask us to see, is this okay, or can you give me a script? I don't do that anymore.
Right. And that saves a lot of time as well.
Yeah.
Okay. This is another thing that I don't know if it's relevant, but because I know people in China, and it's a big population, doing live streams on e-commerce, And a lot of the platforms in China are already attached, meaning that it's just a one space that you watch the video, you click the button, the payment is within WeChat or whatever, and then you get the product the next day. Is live video shopping a thing in the West, or how do you see this progressing?
I see that Amazon's trying to do live, and there's these other lives. I don't see it picking up. I'm not as in the pulse, though. I do think it does work for certain categories. I think it's a category thing. I think it's more like a beauty, like women. I have friends that are live streamers in like Singapore, and it's like skin, or I think women use it more. But I think more effective is just like TikTok itself, not maybe live, but short video in the West does work. But I'm not familiar with, I know they're trying to do more live selling, but I don't think it's picked up as much. You know, it's somewhat related, but I remember that was actually a reason why Chinese sellers like to sell in the US than China. Because even before, like in 2000, when I first came to China, I was like, oh, I want to sell on Taobao. I want to sell in China. And all my staff, I was hiring them. They're like, you're stupid, man. You can sell in the US, go to sleep, don't have to do anything, wake up and have money in your bank. If you want to sell in Chinese e-commerce, they would integrate the chat into the search even before live selling. And everybody would just click the live chat, talk to them.
Right.
Bye. And I feel like live streaming is the same. It's like you got to kind of be alive, not alive, but awake and working. Like some of these live streamers, they can't even meet me or come to like travel. They're like, I have to live stream like all day or like a lot. And it's like a way to show that they're alive and that they're not going to get cheated. So it's like a trust thing. I think the West, we don't need to like watch a live streamer to buy a product, but I think it's more like a place that needs to make sure that seller or the trust, I feel like, is more about.
And also the expectation of the customer, like they expect them to be live at a certain time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, it's more like a trust thing, I feel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, after the pandemic, also there's the issue of shipping cost and just moving products all over the world is causing many of my e-commerce friends like big headaches. What is your experience in this?
I mean, it's fine now, I think, right? I mean, look, it's kind of back to normal.
Right.
Right? But yeah, I mean, there was no reason to be a nightmare in COVID. I mean, the prices just went, everybody's sending masks. You know, that mask stuff, a lot of Amazon sellers became mask sellers in 2020, and that just drove the shipping like crazy high.
Yeah, but also the Evergreen.
Yeah, Evergreen.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, Evergreen got the boat stuck. They also gave the biggest bonus ever to their Taiwanese team staff. They were making so much money. They gouged the market. They killed the market. They squeezed all the money out of us. But now it's kind of back to normal.
Okay.
I had to delay launching a brand for like 2 years because I just didn't want to spend that much. We luckily didn't start. So we just waited for years to start.
I understand you're also sourcing products from Taiwan. So is it any different from, let's say, if you're selling products that you source from China? Because also shipping is an issue here. And how do you circumvent that?
Yeah, it's been a huge issue. Yeah, we do a few. Air is not so bad if you have lightweight products, you know, DHL, and there's even some others like UniExpress. They sponsor some of my events. It's like a kind of middle price. So if you're doing air, it's not a problem. But if you're doing sea, you can't do AGL. So Amazon Global Logistics in China, a lot more people are using that. It's like their own or their white labeled ocean shipping. You can't do that in Thailand. And there's not as many ships. Plus, we're up in Chiang Mai, so you got to truck it down to Bangkok and then send it out. So ocean, but I do ocean here. We do full containers, but it's just not as often. And you can't use AGL and logistics. But more of the issue is the culture. We were chatting before. Thai seller factories are not as hungry for customers at all than Chinese sellers or suppliers. They're family owned. They seem to just get by. They're happy. They don't need pressure to make more money. In my opinion, with like four or five factories I've worked with, they don't care if you buy from them. So, and they tell me like, some of them are the younger generation. They're coming back to Thailand. So one of them was telling me, he could see how frustrated I was when I met him. And he's like, yeah, it's slow, but once you get started, it'll be okay. But getting it started in Thailand is slower and harder.
Do you think there's a good demand of Thai products or Thai-made products in the e-commerce space?
I think Thailand is a little bit like India, where they're handmade, handicraft. You know, Vietnam seems like the most similar competitor to buying from China. It's also a land border with Vietnam and mainland China. So Vietnam seems to be kind of picking up a lot more of the customer, the leaving China, than other parts of Southeast Asia. But Thailand, there are some injection mold factories here, but they even buy their materials from China. Like, they buy the mold from China. So usually you gotta do, so one brand I'm doing is dried grass, like pampas. And so I buy from the farmers. And then we have the assembly. So it's kind of like a lot of human, it's a lot of people. So it's funny because labor is going up in China. And the same reason you move from the US to China is why you move from maybe China to Southeast Asia, because it's a lot of human labor. If it's just injection mold plastics, you're probably stuck in China because it's, all the machines are there, all the production is there. But if you have like something like clothes or maybe handicrafts or handmade, that's probably better to maybe look at moving into like Thailand or other parts of Southeast Asia.
Hmm. And what about Amazon as a platform itself? Like, are you still sticking with it? Because I also hear a lot of people trying to figure out ways to not only create their own brand, but the whole funnel, the sales funnel itself, so that people can just, like, maybe they do SEO better so that they kind of bypass that place. What is your thoughts on that?
I mean, my thought is I recommend one channel first. Don't do multi-channel at the beginning. So I think if you start your e-commerce business, like John does WooCommerce, I think if you're gonna start with Amazon, do Amazon. If you're gonna start with Shopify, WooCommerce, start with that. Don't do two at the same time. So you gotta pick one first, get that one going enough, and then go to a second. I personally choose Amazon first because I can, while it's expensive in fees and PPC, I can get turnover pretty consistently. Because once you get turnover, you can get your price down on your buy side, your factory side. And also what's happening is, so like the Bar Products, a Portuguese distributor contacted our website. I think he saw us on Amazon, because we're not really promoting it anywhere else but Amazon. So I think there are people searching Amazon and then they actually go to your website. I got in so much trouble with eBay. They almost banned me. They kept warning me because I would put like my website in my listing.
Right.
I wouldn't make it a link, but I would put like the New York Bar Store and then space com. And then they kept fighting me. And I kind of, it's harder to do that on Amazon, but I still try to really brand. Because you can still build a brand on Amazon. And while you might pay a high fees, you're still kind of making money or even breaking even for a while. You're building your brand. And of course, once you have a brand, I think that's the most valuable thing. That's the value. With AI and all this stuff, I feel most bullish on brand, personally. Of course, you can say service brand, personal brand, product brand. We're talking about product brand. But I feel like product brand is the most valuable thing with AI because people need to trust a brand to choose between others. So I'm building brands, yes, on Amazon first. When I'm ready or when I have time, I can then open to multiple channels and I can use my turnover and success on Amazon to go multiple channel. And I still defend Amazon a bit. I know they're a bully and I know they're expensive, but you can still use that to kind of bootstrap your brand. And that's what I'm doing.
Or at least get some traffic going on to, you know, have some brand awareness so that when you decided that you want to just shut down the listing, then people will know where to find you at least.
Yeah.
Right.
There are some people that do that and there's some stories because they don't delete your listing. So one of my friends back in the day did a photo frame. He's an inventor. He invented the photo frame that was wireless and it would pull back. This is like 2008 or 9. It would change the photo automatically from your maybe USB drive or computer. This is old school.
Yep.
But he got so upset because he listed on Amazon And he started selling on his website, and he ranked on Google, but his Amazon was above his website, and he didn't have stock. And people would contact him on the website saying, can you please put more stock in Amazon? I want to buy from Amazon. He's like, Amazon, take off my listing. But Amazon wouldn't remove the listing out of stock, or even on his other sellers would sell on his own listing. So that's it's kind of hard to stop in a way,
right,
once you start. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I'm also working at a very early stage, but I'm working on a Web3 e-commerce solution at this bit early stage, sure. But I believe there's going to be more alternatives.
Any specific challenges based here as a seller and dealing with money transactions coming in and going out that you want to share?
You know, I mostly still operate with US companies and Hong Kong companies personally. Mm. When I talk to people about when they decide to open a company where, there's three reasons to open a company, in my opinion: to sell there, to hire there, or to get a visa there, like immigration. So if those three reasons, you know, in Thailand, it seems like a lot of people do it to get a visa. You know, they have to open a company, hire four people. I don't know if you're doing that, John, but some people open restaurants and bars.
In a jurisdiction to sell there, or can you not just have your company wherever and we just offer to sell?
Sure. So the question is, do you need to have a company in the country to sell there? No, that's what cross-border e-commerce kind of is. The difference is that means the buyer is an importer, even if it's B2C. That's why they complain about the tax, you know, the duties. Whether it's Thailand, right? If I ship to Thailand from Amazon US and DHL says I got to pay $100 on a $40 item or something stupid, right? That means you're basically making that buyer be the importer. So yeah, cross border, you don't have to have it there, but to sell easily there locally, to issue tax receipts.
But I presume the tax is going to be charged somewhere along the line. You know, it doesn't really matter where the company's incorporated.
Basically, it's getting harder and harder to avoid tax across border e-commerce. Back in the day, especially Chinese sellers kind of screwed it up for all of us, because they would just sell in Europe, for example. And Europe has VAT, high VAT, right? I mean, and they would just bypass that because they would just not have anything there. And then the local sellers got upset because they have to pay I don't do Europe much, 17% or there's like 21, and then the Chinese seller or the foreign seller or international seller didn't have to pay any. So the governments, all the governments are getting smarter to that or finding more ways. So it's getting, the gap is closing on all of these tax cross-border transactions.
But then I'd imagine the VAT was going to get charged to someone somewhere along the line, and that cost is going to be passed on to someone.
Well, it's, you know, like that's where it's called, like on B2C, if it's a small package and they don't catch that, there's tons of these small packages and they don't bother or they don't check or whatever, it can slip through, but that's the risk. And that's why usually like people complain and people don't receive it and then they send it back and this whole fight. But you know, if you read on a cross-border transaction, it says the buyer needs to pay the duties.
Yeah, they just look to see their way around.
So they try to like declare the value under like each country, like maybe $50 or whatever the value
is. Right. Okay.
I feel like I've asked a lot of questions. Maybe there's the audience side that also want to ask more questions to Mike. So this is the Q&A part, that if there's anything that you want to ask, you can raise your hands and we can give you a mic, which is here.
Yeah.
I got it. Got them.
It's working.
What is the name of that specific Amazon listing AI?
Yeah, I know. It's not that I don't want to say, I just can't remember it.
Okay. I can also Google. So
basically, you can look at a lot of these. I think even the team still uses ChatGPT now, but I got a lifetime deal. Maybe John can remember, but there's some of these template-y ones that are just easier for people, where they give templates of AI outputs and they can do
copy.ai or...
It wasn't I mean, it was a hard one. They have these kind of like geeky names that doesn't have verbs in the middle or something. I mean, I don't think we're using it as much. But basically you get Instagram posts, or you can get Amazon listings, one of them. So you put your prompt and it automatically spits it out. But you can kind of do that pretty easily now within ChatGPT. That was maybe earlier this year, like January, these are all coming out. I'm sorry, I knew, I was hoping nobody asked because I couldn't remember the name.
No worries.
Sorry.
Yes.
Hey, could you, that's okay.
Can you tell me a little more about your Web3 e-commerce? Is that, and when will it launch? When's your expectation?
Sure, so he's asking about the Web3 e-commerce I mentioned. So, yeah, we call it LoadPipe. It's going to be a new protocol for e-commerce transactions on chain or on a blockchain. We started it by buying Purse.io, which is a tool to buy on Amazon with Bitcoin. It's been around for 9 years. I've met the founders during COVID. They got delayed a month until November to close. Everything's getting pushed back, and so that's why I don't like to be the person that keeps pushing back dates. We hope to make an announcement at the summit next month, but we're trying to have something ready by mid-November.
So it's always 1 month away?
Well, no, I always wanted...
I'm joking.
But it's a huge project, but actually it's been moving faster than I thought. We're getting a lot of people interested in it.
And how would we find more about it? Do you have a website?
Yet? Yeah, loadpipe.com. There's an email registration for Be the First to Know. Thanks, John.
Cool. Yes? Derek?
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
Hi, Derek.
Hey, thanks for sharing everything so far. I'm just curious, you're building like a lot of different brands, and I'm wondering what is your thinking behind let's do this product, let's do that product, let's build this brand, as compared to just focusing on one brand and making that mega?
That's a good question. It's sound like my wife, but she's downstairs maybe. But I mean, that's a fair question. I mean, I always choose diversification personally. And also, it's maybe even COVID's fault. I can blame COVID, but one was Asato, the bar products brand with that lady who wants the electrically cooled condiment holder. We had to delay launching like 2 years, 2.5 years. And the product was sitting in the warehouse in Hua Hin. It's made in Hua Hin. So what am I supposed to do? Just wait until this brand is ready, you know, like during, especially COVID, you know, I launched another brand with a friend, Luciano, and he's a designer, and we use a new model for that. So they're all different, I have different partners in each one. And so I try to partner with, like I mentioned earlier, I try to find a strategic advantage of that brand. And it also lets me experiment more. But I do it by category. Like, I don't compete with myself in the same category. And it also, I'm a creator. I'm not really a business person. I'm the person that will just, so many of my business partners and friends say, you should just go into some huge corporation and work in the R&D and just get a budget and just build stuff. I guess I'm like a R&D, I love to create. And so I'm not sure if I advise making multiple brands. It's very hard, but you try to have one person that's the kind of brand manager. And I'm not that of all the brands. So what I'm trying to do is have my operating team that's kind of managing the brands and using our skills to manage the brands, where we have one of the partners that's kind of the brand manager that knows that brand and that product line.
So your operations, actually, you have one operations team that manages all the brands.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you have one key person.
Yeah, and it's usually the partner.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. I have maybe one more question, because I understand you also have a team in Philippines. Can you tell the audience, like, what do they usually manage? How does the work goes, and what's the experience, you know, hiring a team outside, like in Philippines, that helped you with your business?
Sure. So in the Philippines, I first started working with Filipinos in China when I met them at the bar. And I was like, man, your English is really good. What? You're Chinese? No, I'm not Chinese. I'm Filipino. I'm like, Filipino? I didn't really know Filipino was in America, I'll be honest. I'm just one of those ignorant white guys in the U.S. that thinks all Asians look the same. But I started learning about Philippines when I was in China in 2008. From my bar nights. And they're great singers, right? There are a lot of good Filipino singers. And, you know, I put job posts out on English, like, media websites in China, and it would apply. And, you know, of course, just like in Thailand, it's hard to hire foreigners in a country because locals get usually preference, or the government wants you to hire locals. But I was kind of secretly hiring Filipinos in China, like, under the table. Don't tell Mr. Xi, he might send police to get me in Thailand. But and then they would not be able to stay in China, and they had to go back to the Philippines. Marie. So I started with Marie. She's married to a German now in Germany, speaks German. But she got stuck in the Philippines, couldn't come back to China. And then I said, stay there. In 2009, I said, just stay there, and maybe we can hire more people. And, you know, I would go there sometimes. Filipinos, I think they're the third or fourth biggest population in the world of English-speaking people. They learn English when they're school. And the cost of labor is very low. I think it's their government's fault. But yeah. I give them more than I think of their normal jobs. But basically, I have 15 people now, and they do a lot of content creation. It's basically content. We have even this podcast. Alvin will be editing this, hopefully. I think the camera died, but we'll do the audio on the other half. So this show will be done by Alvin. He's in Cebu. He's amazing. And I believe team is the most valuable thing. Especially when I got stuck with COVID, I doubled down on leadership management training. I've read John Maxwell books. I recommend reading leadership books by John Maxwell. I read a few of them, two or three times. But basically, team is everything. And yeah, I'm so impressed. Like, I'm so impressed with some of the talent, whether it's Filipino or anywhere, but Philippines especially, the English and the labor cost. So I have an Amazon team, and I have a content team, and a marketing team. And it's so hard. It's so hard. You know, like, Sally's father died earlier this year, so she was out, and her mother died 2 days ago. So she's out right now. So there's lots of hardships in film. I guess I have big families, and she's not bullshitting me. I believe it. So that's why you just gotta almost have to have like two, three people in each department, in my experience. Because one of my friends, he had one superstar that could do everything. And last week she left. Hmm. He's dead. He's like, he can't even do a webinar. We're supposed to do a webinar. He canceled it. I mean, we didn't really promote it much, but he didn't do a webinar, and he had to cancel it. So you have to kind of build a diversified team. That's the biggest problem people have. They complain about, say, Philippines or hiring online because they put everything on one person. That one person disappears, family dies, gets sick, gets another job. So my wife, again, is critical of me. She's like, you have so many people, you waste all your money on that, but I'm trying to build a huge empire. And I believe a team is the most critical part.
Where do you find those people? You travel a lot, you see them locally, but you also have Fiverr or Upwork. Are you also finding talent there?
So finding people, again, I don't want to show off, but I'm at another level, but I used to do onlinejobs.ph. I'd say it was probably the best, one of the better ones now. But now I'm so blessed. I wish it was so much longer, but during COVID, I hired HR. So I have an HR manager, and she hires. And so she goes to like Facebook groups in Philippines, and she's posting in like Filipino Facebook groups, mostly now.
Right. So if I have to just wrap it up and have a takeaway, focus on the branding, use AI tools, and build a very strong team.
Yeah. I'd say, you know, we talk about product or marketing.
Right.
That's kind of the two main parts of a business. And I think if you're an Amazon seller or e-commerce seller, it's more and more important product now. And most sellers would agree with me. Okay. Of course, you need marketing. I'm not saying not do marketing, but I feel product is more important.
Right. Okay. Now, I just want to conclude this session of the event because usually I would like just... you know, like to have a more proper conversation like this format so that, you know, I can really think of the questions and have Mike or any of the speakers just answer them. But then after this, we have snacks and we still have drinks for sale. And I really like you all to just network, get to know each other. And if there's any more questions to Mike.
I think your Halloween part, you have a Halloween event and I have a cross-border summit.
Yes, and we also need to promote two events that's happening in November. Maybe you can start with your event first.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so in almost exactly 1 month, on the 16th and 17th of November, plus the 15th, we just added an expo. We're gonna have the cross-border summit. It's a paid event, premium event, 2 full days. We're bringing speakers that have never been to Thailand before. If you know about Amazon sellers like Danny McMillan, Chris Rawlings, Howard Tai, the professor. So, you know, we're investing a lot, bringing these great people here to share. It's going to be heavy Amazon day one. Day two will be more multi-channel markets. It's called Cross Border Summit. And if you, it's not for new sellers, so you're welcome to come, but it's a little bit more advanced, experienced sellers. So if you're interested, and if you just want to dabble, on November 15th, we're adding a new expo. We're going to do the first e-commerce expo in Chiang Mai the day before at crossbordermatchmaker.com. You can check that one out. So that's my two plugs.
We actually have a couple of flyers that we're going to put on our notice board, but if you want to check it out, you can also ask AP. Another promotion that we want to do is Halloween is coming. And so from 28th until the 31st of October, it's a 4-night event. We're going to have a haunted house experience, but a more artsy, immersive theater style Halloween. This is our third year doing. It's called Alt So Scary. So anyone here who is interested, you can also ask AP. If you purchase the tickets from this property or from us, you get 50% off, half price. So, you know, dress
up. Deal.
Deal. Yeah. Half off, ask for friends. It's a great event, and really we want to bring, I think me and Mike, the commonality here is like we really want to bring like good events and the talents and the community to be more like active in Chiang Mai. So thanks so much for coming here and to share your experience. Thank you all for coming and I hope you have a good night. So
that's it. Thank you.
And thank you to our sponsor, our returning sponsor, Mercury.com online bank. Well, it's a real bank, but you can do it totally online for US. Our Blimp program participants are going through this as well. Thank you, Mercury. Travis is great there. He's been on our show. He's been in our events. We're going to have another event where we will have them attending as well. And if you want to get a little bonus for you and us, if you sign up and do some special circumstances, you can go to globalfromasia.com/mercury. I also have a video tutorial that we use even for the Blimp people. I use the same exact video to learn how to use it. I hope you can check it out totally free. Why not? See you there.
So Maggie, why did you like the Mummy roller coaster? I thought you said that that was scary.
I like it because it's scary.
You like it because it's scary. That's actually cool. In business, we have to like something too, because if it's scary, even so something's scary, you need to still do it, because that's how you get stronger. That's how you grow, by doing something that scares you. They say something like, do something every day, Maggie, that scares you, and it will make you stronger.
I want to go to the place, the haunted house.
We're gonna go this.
Wait, what is it called? Is it called a spooky ground?
It's the haunted mansion, I think.
Go to the bathroom. Oh.
Okay. It's the haunted mansion.
Ooh, Mina.
Yeah, so this show is gonna go online on Halloween 2023. But
he's also gonna come.
Yeah, Mina's coming, it's gonna be great. Alright, well, Miles is in the bathroom, Maggie, so I think we're gonna finish this show. globalfromasia.com/rollercoaster. In business and in life. All right, say goodbye, Maggie.
Bye-bye.
Miles said bye too.
Bye.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.